Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, howdy, howdy, everyone out there in listening land. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's LB Bork, and this is Revolution Radio, as the station had noted during the station break. I'm the newest host, or the host that is on for the next 2 hours. And again, this is Dare to Think Out Loud. And that title is, well, it was designed by a guy named Mike Gaddy. And he's one of the panelists on this think tank. I don't know. It's a kind of a roundtable thing that we do on Fridays. And we're going to be talking about today's subject, which is socialism and its dead entities. But before we get into that, I want to go over what we kind of missed last week that I think is very important, and it's no one's fault that we had so much information to go over last week, which was basically wars and how international bankers profit from them. And it's the fundamental foundation for what's going on in the world. And by the time we get done with the end of today's show, we're going to show how socialism is the tool that they suck everyone into, kind of a silent slavery, into a silent slavery. So anyway, being as how only Mike and myself are on today. My name's LB Bork. Again, I'm founder of People's Awareness Coalition and wrote a book called The Red Amendment that would take down the establishment, but no one took it to heart. I wrote it 20 years ago and released it, and it's still being ignored today because of socialism, basically. We'll get into that a little bit, and I'll explain that later. But my point being is, being how it's only Mike and myself on today, I want to go into what People's Awareness Coalition is doing, and my radio show for the near future. And, of course, I want Mike to talk about what he's come up with in regard to his program that's on Fridays, or not Fridays, Sundays, excuse me. It started a couple weeks ago. With that, Mike, how you doing? Why don't you tell the folks what you're up to?
Oh, well, how you doing today, LB?
A little confused, like always.
Well, that's a good state to be in, considering what's going on in this country.
Yeah, I don't like the state of confusion we're in, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that's the state we live in, unfortunately. No, I have a program on Sundays on Studio A, this same studio, from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, and it's titled Addicted to Our Own Destruction. And I go into basically how we've been set up to believe in a system that enslaves us. Much about the central theme of what we all talk about. This Sunday, we're going to have a good friend of mine, Darrell Wayne, on, and he will be discussing aeronautic factors, and we will go into some detail, especially as to how those factors, him being a retired commercial airline pilot, we will go into detail about the flight patterns of 9/11. So I hope everyone will get a chance to drop in and listen to that.
Yes. That kind of goes with what Dave Scorpio or Scorpio on his show gets into, the conspiracy issues over the years. And I know Dave and I get into some debate about some things, but in general, we agree on a lot. And I think you and myself agree on a lot, too. And I think that's a problem with this so-called movement, is people aren't working together because they disagree on one little thing. As a lot of people or so-called Christians know that there's, I can't even count the denominations of Christianity that are out there, because they pulled some segment of the Bible out and practice that as a religion of the Bible, and it creates division. And I think by the end of today's program, that's going to be the final goal of this program, is to discuss or exemplify that people are divided, and what we're against is basically good and evil. That's what we're up against, and the people that are dividing and not working together are feeding the evil. And that gets into what I want to go into today, the socialism and its dead entities and how that works. But before we get into the banking issue that we want to continue from last week, I want to tell people and the listeners, what's going on with my program on Tuesdays, The Ultimate Remedy. I'm not trying to really change anything. I've got to get back to the program's roots, which is basically People's Awareness Coalition's Remedy, and getting people on board to helping us. And I really appreciate all the people that have helped me the last couple years on just discussing topics. But especially you, Mike, the last year we've gone over some of the foundational problems of what we're facing right now. And saying that, the problem is with people, they don't know what they ate for breakfast yesterday. And they're concentrating on what they see in front of them, in front of their face, not future-wise, but in front of their face. And that's how they've commandeered this movement, basically. Political discussions, of the day. And what we're dealing with is a foundational problem. Don't you agree, Mike? I mean, you can't fix what's meant to be broken.
Well, we've been broken in our political beliefs since 1787 with the new Constitution.
Right.
That's my opinion, and I know a lot of people don't agree with it, but I think given enough time, I can prove it.
Right. Well, I agree with that, and I see it. I just want to say the place I might differ is I knew about the problems of the Constitution 20 years ago, 25 years ago, but I decided to use a rule that we used early on in regard to remedy, and that's using their law against them. So what we do is use their Constitution, as Brett Kavanaugh says, as written. Whatever the hell that's supposed to mean, but I guess it's as you see it in text today, the progressive mess they made under the 14th Amendment included, to use this thing against them. And it's a mess, and we're going to go into that today, and hopefully we'll pull out some things that you can see and what's happened and how they're manipulating people. With that, I know you've studied also, Mike, the Civil War period, and something you told me a few months ago, which just adds to what I felt was wrong in the past. Like I've said for many years, people keep telling me that, let me stop there. This is what makes me upset. Someone told, I heard on the station in one of the roundtables a few weeks back, my material, Bork's material, is presumption or theory. Our, the main statement was theory. My work is not theory. It's based on facts. I can tie it to the Constitution. It basically boils down to what I've been saying also for years. The problem is people believe what they want to believe. And there's a common law maxim that fits that. Let those who be deceived, want to be deceived. So people that say stupid things like that off the cuff and don't look into my work in its totality are trouble, for one thing. And basically feeding the people we're against, which is the evil side of what's gone on for the last, well, it started a long time ago, but their solid program started 500 years ago. And it's coming to completion now. And there's backbiting and fighting going on. We can get into that a little bit during this today, during today's program. But what you discovered, Mike, sorry I got off on a rabbit trail there. What you discovered was very important to what we discussed last week in regard to international wars and bankers. And you told me a few months back or a little while back that the Rothschilds were kind of seen poking around just prior to the Civil War, kind of scoping things out in the North and South. You want to go into that a little bit?
Well, the Rothschilds had one of their kin in his mid-20s, Solomon James Rothschild. And he traveled extensively from New York to Philadelphia to New Orleans to Atlanta to other places for a little over a year. And he was, in my opinion, was doing a forward recon of the situation in both the North and the South. And he was writing letters back home to his uncle in France and was feeding him the information on what was going on, especially politically. And he spoke in those letters of some of the events that he attended and who was there and what their thoughts were. And he was right up to the secession movement in late 1860. He was riding back home to France. He mysteriously died at the age of 29, so he didn't live, or 27, I believe. He didn't live to be that old, but in his mid-20s, he was obviously doing work for the family in the U.S.
Yes. And that's a foundation to what we talked about last week in regard to, the bankers taking over via war. And that brings me to something else that John Breeson and I talked about this week. As anyone that studies communism or socialism, communism, the factors that surround it know that Marx said, and all communist, popular communists like Lenin and Stalin have said that socialism is the foundation for communism. So that in sense tells you that there are two different entities or two different topics or subjects to be looked at. And of course, I've done that through my book and my work. But John was talking about Fabian socialism, which is basically soft socialism, which is a gradual implementation of communism, or it feeds the gradual implementation of communism. And then there's the Marxist socialism, which is, pursuant to what's mentioned in the Communist Manifesto, which I say was done in the United States with the Civil War. They did do it by any means possible to get it done, which includes death or war, right? So this ties to what we're talking about with the Rothschilds scoping out in the South what needed to be done with the Civil War. And as anyone knows that follows my work, the Synagogue of Satan is the foundation for communism. And it's the foundation for evil. So socialism itself is the problem, but many people don't really know what socialism is. It's some candy coated thing that basically gives equity or to people or equality, but it really is not an equal thing, because what we've seen with the socialism that's been introduced into the United States, the rich have gotten richer. And that's why I've said the Communist Manifesto is nothing but a blueprint for the capitalist, or to establish a fascist-based government. And as you have eloquently laid out, Mike, or have said, that socialism or the fascist-type system, it was introduced with the Constitution, which I agree with. The Alien and Sedition Acts were kind of, they were of that purpose. And maybe you could go into the Sedition Acts, which basically is pursuant to what's going on right now with the federal government going into the states to protect their property. And these so-called that's the thing that gets me, is the what they say about these so-called peaceful protesters. They're rioters. They're creating acts of violence, which is all orchestrated. In my mind, I have no doubt in my mind it's of purpose, and we can talk about that in a minute. But why don't we go into that Sedition Act that was put in place?
Well, the Federalists controlled the government from the inception of under the Constitution, beginning in 1789. And, of course, they controlled the Senate by 20-2. There were two anti-Federalists in the Senate. And there were, it was about 48-11 in the House of Representatives that the Federalists controlled. So the people who wrote the Constitution controlled the government that they had created under that Constitution. And so with the implementation of the U.S. Bank, by Alexander Hamilton. And, you know, ironically, none of the shareholders in that bank were ever listed. So we don't know who actually owned and controlled the bank that Hamilton created. But it was the precursor to what we have today in the Federal Reserve. But we do know that with their boom and bust and borrowing the money that they were borrowing from this bank, and the U.S. government borrowed quite heavily from that bank in the first 6 years of this country's existence. And because of that, the inflation rate had gone, into the 50-some percent and higher, almost into 70% in some places, because of this, bank that was absolutely corrupt in its operation. And so a lot of people begin to wake up, and James Madison did a flip-flop, and he went from a Federalist to the Democratic-Republican camp of Thomas Jefferson. And he split in about 1792-93 when he began to see the financial end coming apart under Hamilton and inflation rising, and he knew that his political career was going to be best served serving with or siding with Thomas Jefferson and that group. Well, once Washington's out of office and John Adams becomes president, his vice president was Thomas Jefferson. And so there was an awful lot of criticism of the government. When you begin to really get into really tyrannizing the people, the people become upset, and the people start criticizing the government. So the Federalists were reacting to that with the Alien and Sedition Act. And so they put this all together in about 1798, 1799, and they come up with this Alien and Sedition Act, which says that you can go to prison for saying or writing anything negative about the government. And ironically, since Jefferson was of a different political persuasion back then, the Sedition Act said you could not criticize anyone in government except the vice president. So you can criticize him all you want to. So then they actually had a member of Congress, and I can't remember his name right now. Pardon me for that. But they had a member of Congress who actually stood up on the floor of the House and criticized Adams' presidency, and he was arrested, and he was sent to prison for criticizing the government, and he was a member of that government. So he was, even if you were a member of government, you weren't allowed to be to criticize that government. So this brought about a polarization of the people in 1799, in that era, and we had Jefferson running for president, Adams was running for president, Aaron Burr was running for president. One of the Pinckneys in South Carolina was also running for president, Coatsworth Pinckney, I believe, and he was running for president. And there is some evidence that the Federalists were so afraid that they were about to lose power in the 1800 election that Washington was actually contacted and asked if he would come back and run again. And there is some letters among the founders speaking of that. But, of course, Washington died in 1799, so it became a non-factor. So then we had the election of 1800, and, of course, Adams by this time had split with Hamilton, so the Federalist Party was splintering in front of everyone. And you had Hamilton, who actually supported Jefferson because he and Adams had gotten into it. And also, you know, Hamilton did not like Aaron Burr, even though, you know, this is a tasty bit of information. Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton joined as partners in the creation of the Bank of New York in 1792-93. So they were actually partners in a financial endeavor. And, of course, this entity in New York was loaning money to the government as well. It was a real mess. So Jefferson and Madison, they go to their respective states, and I say that because Jefferson went to Kentucky, which was western Virginia, had been West Virginia. And Madison goes to Virginia, and they have the legislature write up what was called, you know, basically the alien and the opposition. So the Kentucky and the Virginia resolves, or the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions. And so if you read the Kentucky resolution, which Jefferson wrote, the first paragraph, actually not the whole paragraph, if you read it to the first semicolon, it's one of the most wonderful pieces of writing about what government is supposed to be and what the U.S. government was supposed to be, I believe that one can find anywhere. And, you know, they aren't mentioned very much and they aren't talked about very much. Madison, being the consummate politician, what he wrote for the Virginia legislature was a watered-down version of what Jefferson wrote. And, of course, Madison was trying again with that writing of that resolution to speak out of both sides of his mouth. So he wanted to keep both people. He wanted to engender as many people on either side as he could. As I said, your stereotypical politician. So anyway, you end up with the election of 1800, which ends up in a tie between Jefferson and Aaron Burr. And so they actually went by the Constitution in 1800, not so in the year 2000 during that election. But in 1800, the Congress, as is in the Constitution, when you had a deadlock between candidates for president, it went to the House of Representatives and not to the Supreme Court, as Bush and Gore did in 2000. So in 1800, it goes to the House of Representatives, and the House of Representatives, I believe, voted 30 or 31 times, had took 31 different ballots, and it came out a tie every time until the last vote, in which the gentleman who had been put in jail, the member of Congress who had been put in jail for criticizing John Adams, switched his vote and voted for Jefferson and Jefferson became president. So that began at that time a long tenure of what we call the Democratic Republicans of the era, started with Jefferson and basically ended with Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Did he really split the party at that time? I know the Radical Republicans, who I refer to as the real communists or Reds, designed the Republicans in the soon after Karl Marx released the Communist Manifesto in the 1850s. But what happened to the parties when Jackson kind of broke Jefferson's Democratic Republicans up as one party that opposed the Federalist, as you described?
Well, in some ways, you know, and we call Jackson a populist, and we do know, if you really get into your deep research, that there were multiple assassination attempts against Jackson. The bankers did not like him. I loved a quote from Jackson when John Marshall ruled that the U.S. bank was constitutional, and I love Jackson's comment. He says, "Well, Mr. Chief Justice, you have made your, you have rendered your opinion. Let's see you enforce it." And that is what needs to be said to the Supreme Court today with some of these off-the-wall things they come up with. Someone in some position, either in the legislature or in the executive, needs to tell them to take a hike, because they were never meant to be the final arbiters of what is and what is not constitutional in this country. But we've evolved that way. Of course, the Federalists left basically the Constitution of 1787 an open contract, which they did not complete. And I actually found some evidence to that yesterday. They even admitted they didn't complete it. They left it up to the first Congress to complete it, of course, which the Congress did, especially with the judiciary, with the Judicial Act of 1789.
With that, we have a break. This is Dare to Think Out Loud, and this is Revolution Radio or freedomslips.com. My name is LB Bork. We'll be back after these station announcements. Stay tuned. Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. with your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
No, we're back. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's LB Bork, and today I have panelist, or I don't know, he's a roundtable host, you might say, Mike Gaddy with me. So today we're discussing socialism and its dead entities, and we're kind of picking up where we left off last week in regard to the way they implement socialism is through the banking system. And I know there are a lot of people that follow the money, and you know, that's a rule I say, follow the money, and then you can find out where the problems are. And the rich get richer is another thing you can use to find out the problem or detect the problem. Finding it out and how it works is what we're discussing, I think, today, or you could say. So the thing I have issue with is, you know, Rothschild did say a while back that give me control over a nation's currency and I care not who makes the laws. I agree with that to a point, but I think he was talking mostly or primarily on the public's part, because the majority of people are, let's face it, they're gullible, and I like to call them stupid and idiots. So, yeah, what's going on today is not done so much by law, but by the currency. And in that respect, that's true, but they can be beaten with law. But no one's interested in that. And I can see him being beaten. George Bush back in 1991, or during that period of time, George Bush Sr. said, you know, they follow the rule of law, not the law of the jungle. And of course, that's a thing that most people are clueless about. And even the lawyers that control the system are clueless about the law, because basically they've been taught the system. And I haven't really practiced or been into court since 1997, I think it was. But I've dabbled in a few things with people, and I haven't run their cases, because I have a rule of not helping U.S. citizens, because per Section 2 of the 14th Amendment and Section 1 that ties into Section 2, of course, they are enemies. They are, in rebellion against the Republic. So following that rule, it's not made me a lot of money, because I could have, entered into their grief and raped them like the lawyers do in the system. But I chose not to. And most people want to stay in the system instead of getting out. And that's basically the crux of what I want to talk about the next hour and a half, and how to get out of it and what needs to be done. But the law is how to beat them. I think it's our Achilles heel. And I know Mike doesn't like law as much as I respect it. But I look at Bush's statement as a promise. And I've seen it work, and if we can expose that and get back to a system that's doable or not deceptive like we have, we can win this. Because at this point, I think they're just playing a lot of games. What's going on in these cities right now is all planned opposition. And you can see what's happening with that. They let these 8% lefty morons go out there and raise havoc and cause problems. So your socialist, which everyone in America is a socialist, that was established under the Constitution, like Mike has, we've talked about over the last several months. Socialism is basically people being subdued by government in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not going to go into details of that. The 14th Amendment totally implemented the foundation for socialism. And it can pull people into the jurisdiction of the federal government, which I'll go into starting with a paper in a few minutes. I want to talk a little bit more with Mike before I read that paper. But this dog and pony, these dog and pony shows that are going on right now is forcing the majority, the silent majority, are begging for their police forces now. So they did these things on purpose so the people would beg for their socialism back. And socialism started, the blueprint for it started before they started these states overlaying the kingdoms of the world back in the 1700s is when all this started. And this is a foundation for basically their municipal law. Vattel said when he wrote the Law of Nations that the people of a nation are considered citizens, and a citizen is a term of municipal law, and it roots back to the Roman systems of law 2,000 years ago. So that sets up the legal fiction that you're under the law of persons, which is private law, and the constitution of a country or state is public law. So when you call yourself a citizen or act as a citizen under even the original constitution or even the Articles of Confederation, you're agreeing to all the private law, the legislative law that they lay down. I'm telling you this in the bare minimum form of what's happened in the United States. So that's how they're controlling people. And I call basically civil law as a avenue or a means for totalitarian socialism. It's a means to control people over any custom and usage that they have, or grant them things that have been deemed unlawful under common law, which is we brought from England, and which was developed through, time. And, of course, they perverted that. And I know Mike's given me some references to that that are 300 years old, how they deem case law, common law, which is partially nonsense to a point. Or in regard to what Mike gave me, I agree to it because of all the statuses and things that can happen. Case law in every fact of the case cannot be represented by the facts of another case. So it violates due process. Calling case law, common law is a violation of due process. You can get ideas of custom and usage through common law maxims. And some cases that come up. But, if you have different entities, corporate entities, foreigners in your country, and things of this nature, there's no way to exactly come to a principle of common law under case law or, cases that go through the courts. So the whole system's been a joke for 230-plus years. And it was set up, in my belief, like I said, it started 500 years ago with the Jesuits entering the church and going from there. Of course, it was going on before that, but they really got their operation in gear with the they called it Reformation. And there was two Reformation people. There was Martin Luther and then John Calvin. And John Calvin was a false reformist. He basically was setting up the system of civil law under the Bible when he went to Geneva to write his Bible. And he came back and the Jesuits took it from there. And, of course, the Jesuits took over after the Civil War in full glory. And that's when In God We Trust showed up on the money and whatever. So the synagogue of Satan is behind all this. And they kind of pull the strings, behind what's going on. And anyway, Mike, didn't mean to leave you out there. Do you have anything to add, maybe?
Well, one of the first things I would like to do is answer a question from the chat room, and they wanted to know, someone wanted to know who the person was who was arrested for speaking out against the government, and that was Congressman Matthew Lyon, L-Y-O-N, and he's the one who eventually broke the vote in 1800, and ironically, he was re-elected to Congress, the only member of Congress in American history who was re-elected to his position while he was sitting in jail. And so he was in jail for violating the Alien and Sedition Acts. And that wonderful judicial system, what he was sentenced to was a $1,000 fine, if I can remember correctly. And he was from Vermont. And so he was ordered to pay a $1,000 fine and court costs, and Judge William Patterson lamented being unable to give Lyon a harsher punishment. So that shows you how wonderful the judicial system was back then. It was owned by the people in power just as it is today.
Today. I was thinking when you were describing what went on with the Federalists and the Sedition Act, speaking out against the government, that I'm doing it today. How come they don't come after me, do you think?
Well, give them time, LB. It's all a matter of time. They still have, if you look at it, Woodrow Wilson passed something much similar during World War One to keep the American people from bad-mouthing the government for going to war. When Wilson had promised the people during his election, if he was elected, that he would not send America's boys to a war in Europe. And then he promptly did because the bankers told him to. And so he came up with an Espionage Act, I believe it's 1917. And that's still on the books. And I am sure at some point in time, our wonderful Homeland Security, George Bush's Nazi force, I'm sure at some point in time they are going to start implementing the provisions of the Espionage Act of 1917.
Someone just put a quote in from Marbury versus Madison. Supposedly Justice Marshall said this, and I haven't verified it, but he said, certainly all those who have framed written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation. That's a misstatement. That's not true. Well, if Marshall's lying or the fact of that matter.
Well, John Marshall is a convicted liar because at the Virginia Ratification Convention, he promised the electors in the Virginia Ratification Convention that if they just would ratify the Constitution, that the Supreme Court would never overrule a state court. And that promise is in effect. And then John Marshall was one of the first ones to do exactly what he said he wouldn't. He should not have been sitting in the Marbury v. Madison case because the person who did not deliver Marbury his judgeship was none other than John Marshall himself, who was Secretary of State under Adams. Mm-hmm. So he should have recused himself, shouldn't have been involved in that case. Ironically, in the Marbury v. Madison case, Marbury said that the Judicial Act of 1789 was unconstitutional, but we still have it. So how?
Who said that?
Marshall.
I'm sorry, Marshall did. Yeah, it was unconstitutional, but it's still there.
It's still there. He said it was unconstitutional. He made that ruling in Marbury v. Madison.
Well, my gripe with what he said being paramount law, it's I guess if it was pursuant to the state constitutions, that would be true, but it's not the federal constitution. It's only supreme law of the land. If he's referencing maybe the state constitutions being paramount, that recognized God as the paramount source or authority, that could be maybe what he was referencing.
Well, let's not forget, LB, that under the Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2, it specifically says that it would be the supreme law of the land as long as it is in pursuance of the Constitution. Now, it's funny how lawyers and judges leave that in pursuance of out of their rulings. And Roy Cooper, the present governor of North Carolina, used that famously with the Health Care Act in North Carolina. He sent a notice to the Congress or the legislature of the state of North Carolina and told them that it was, and he listed Article 6, Clause 2, and left out the phrase "in pursuance of." Of course, he's now governor, and he's, you know, so it didn't hurt him any with the voters, because they wouldn't know the Constitution if it hit him in the ass anyway. So that was the exact phrase. And Marshall, you know, one of the things I loved was about Luther Martin was Luther Martin, the attorney general from Maryland and the longest tenured attorney general in American history, went toe to toe with Marshall in several cases, especially the case with Maryland in 1819. And one of the greatest quotes I think ever was when Marshall was lecturing Luther Martin about what happened at the Constitutional Convention. And he kept telling him over and over and over again, it was McCulloch v. Maryland, 1819, I believe. He kept telling him over and over again what happened at the Constitutional Convention. And when the Chief Justice finished his tirade, Luther Martin said, "With all due respect, Mr. Chief Justice, I was at the Constitutional Convention and you were not."
Yeah, the people in the chat room are having issue or whatever with my statement about Marshall. They verified it as being true, and I kind of explained where he would be coming from if in case that is the fact.
Well, I'm not sure where Marshall was coming from, because he was like Madison. He, you know, he told the people that the Supreme Court would never overrule the state court, and then he did it. So he was a convicted liar from day one, so I'm pretty sure he was going to say whatever was politically expedient.
Yeah, politically expedient. That's the way to phrase that or look at that, I think, yes. It seems like all these people do what they need to get the job done. And can we say Marshall is a Federalist, a true Federalist?
Oh, big time.
Yeah. I just wanted to verify that.
He was also Thomas Jefferson's cousin. They were actually cousins. And
oh, really?
Yes, and that was interesting, because they never got along, and that was one of the great battles of history. John Marshall's father put on his wife's, or John Marshall himself put on his mother's tombstone was that she wasn't a very attractive woman. So, I'm not sure what kind of person puts that on the tombstone of their wife, but you know, that's one of those crazy things you throw into a conversation. Doesn't have a lot of relevance, but I think it goes to the character of the man himself.
Well, it kind of sets up the principles of America too. Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue and whatever. Yeah.
Well, if you want to read some great political argument, I mean just absolutely great. After the McCulloch v. Maryland case in 1819, where basically Marshall ruled that the court could decide the constitutionality of any law that was out there, and that basically went against the Constitution itself and totally against the separation of powers. And so Spencer Roane, who was Patrick Henry's son-in-law, married Patrick Henry's daughter, Anne. He was the chief judge in Virginia, and it was rumored that had John Adams not placed John Marshall as chief justice the night before Jefferson was inaugurated, that Jefferson would have appointed Spencer Roane to that position as chief justice. And one can only wonder with the what ifs if that would have happened had Spencer Roane been there. But Spencer Roane took he got after Marshall so bad in 1819 about the McCulloch v. Maryland decision that the chief justice, for the first time in history, took to the newspapers to try to convince the people of his position. And those are available for people who are interested in such. And that is a fantastic set of arguments back and forth between Marshall and Spencer Roane.
So back to, you know, staying on subject here of the Federalist, because as we've discussed in past shows, and what I know you believe, or, well, I know you believe that Federalists were socialists or authoritarians, and that's basically the foundation for socialism, a way to get control of people, dangling carrots to get money out of them or profits from them. And that's the foundation for communism. Basically, it's stealing economies of people, of people, a nation, a country, to profit from them individually. And that's what the human resource thing is all about, that a people, you know, Americans have gladly accepted over the past 30, 40 years. I mean, they have no problem with being a human resource, which is a term of slavery, as far as I'm concerned, which roots back to socialism. But going back to Jackson, what was his purpose up of breaking up Jefferson's party? Because as far as I can see, Jefferson, I know you like Patrick Henry, for example. He was a true statesman, in my opinion. But I think there's very few statesmen in that were around after the Constitution was put in place. But I think Jefferson was the closest one to being a statesman. Don't you agree? Why was Jackson so hell bent on destroying his party?
Well, you know, I think that basically what we had 20 some years, almost 30 years of the party of Jefferson, if you would, going through Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, on down the line with, you know, each one of Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe each having 8 years in office. And, of course, for the people who are interested in history, right after Jefferson's term was coming to an end, there was a huge battle in the party then between the supporters of Madison and the supporters of Monroe. So that was a classic battle within the party. So there had always been factions within that party, like there will be with any other party, LB. And finally, I think with the Whigs coming out, especially in that 1830s era, with the Webster and others who were basically Federalists, but they back then they were going under Whigs in some respects. So you had what I believe was a natural evolution, because at some point in time, even when times are good, as they were under Jefferson, the ugly head of government engages the people, and you end up with factions fighting against each other.
Mm-hmm. And, similar to the Christian denominations, you know.
Right. You know, why do we have so many different churches? It's the right. Same thing. They claim to believe the same thing. But I believe, and I believe it, I don't know how you could argue with it, is that the Constitution was a socialist document, and especially in the first power given to Congress, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, which was the clause that gave them unlimited taxation by unlimited means. If you look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, there is no limit to how much you can be taxed, people. There is absolutely none whatsoever. And whether it be direct tax, indirect taxes, Of course, all those are incorrect, but indirect taxes, you know, excise taxes, you know, everything that we're dealing with today, that set it up. And when a people can be subject to unlimited taxation, that's a socialist society. So people might say, well, you know, the Constitution wasn't socialist. Well, the very first power given to Congress made it so. Because yes. If I can, by the force of government, if I can take everything you own at a whim through taxation, you're not free. And you're living in a socialist society. And one of the things that, you know, I would tell people to read is to go into some of these, especially the arguments on Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, and look at some of the opposition. And one of the ones that I would tell people to read is Brutus Number 5, which was basically was the judge, Yates, who had left the Constitutional Convention. He was a delegate there from New York. He and John Lansing Jr. left the Constitutional Convention after barely a month and said that they couldn't stay because the people there were exceeding the power that had been that they had been authorized with by their respective states. And so Yates becomes the Chief Justice of the New York Supreme Court, and he wrote under the Anti-Federalist Brutus. And in number five, he just completely exposes how Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 created a socialist society, although he didn't call it that. But he outlines it perfectly. That word did not come into use. And if we go back to Marx, LB, Marx said that democracy is the first step to communism.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
I think maybe you're right. It was the later communists that said socialism leads to communism. But democracy is the foundation, depending how it's used or implemented, is the foundation for socialism. And
absolutely, because anytime the majority can rule the minority has no say-so.
But
the minority
with
no rights.
What they've done with the 14th Amendment, though, is given minority voice over the majority. And that's what's happening with these damn social media platforms. Anyway, this is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's LB Bork. That was the first hour of the program today. We'll be back in a few minutes after these station announcements with hour two. Stay tuned. We're talking about socialism and its dead entities. And we'll get into the entity issue next hour.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
Anarcho-syndicalist socialist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet. Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio! Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. This is hour two of the program of July 31st, 2020. Glad you could make it. Folks that are listening, this is... broadcast on Revolution Radio. That is found at revolution.radio and or freedomslips.com. And I would like to thank the managers and the people running the station for this opportunity to broadcast this truth over the so-called airwaves. It'd be internet for most of you. It's probably the last safe bastion of radio truth out there that's got any, you know, host of people that work together. Because I don't know if you've looked at or watched what went on in Congress this week with the so-called social media people. But the socialist money has made them rich. And that's the basis of socialism. And that's why the Constitution, excuse me, works so well, especially under the 14th Amendment, the last 130 years, and the Constitution itself over the past, you know, 230 years. It's worked very well to make these people rich, and that's what its purpose. And that's what communism's purpose is, to make the elite rich under the ignorance of the population they're doing business with. And that's the problem. If you noticed, they don't teach law in school, and they don't teach law in law schools. They teach procedure and their system. And surely under the 14th Amendment, that's what they've done. They've created this legal system over proper law that controls people and sucks them dry, sucks the blood out of them. And socialism is the carrot they do it with. And socialism is also a way for these people to be totalitarian or authoritarian and do things, you know, against people's will based on dangling carrots. Or by force hopefully... It was my goal for that not to happen. We talked about the Sedition Acts last hour and, you know, me being left alone. And so far I have been left alone. My goal was to expose this to the best ability and have people understand it so it could take it down. So the only thing they had left is force. And as if you've watched what's going on with these programmed riots in the last couple months, it's been almost 2 months these have been going on, based on Black Lives Matter, which is just another tool for them to do what they're doing, which, by the way, this virus is a tool to destroy small business, which was the Communist Manifesto's goal. I guess they couldn't get it done fast enough in America, so they had to implement this virus to destroy small business. It's a total joke. Very makes me very upset that the public's falling for this. And that's what I want to talk about before the end of the hour today, is how to get out of this and what needs to be done to get it fixed. People are going to have to abstain and get out of the system. And the Amish are the only ones that I've seen over the course of my life that come even close to doing what needs to be done. And they're still, the problem with the Amish, though, they're subdued like anyone else by the people that surround them. They're having trouble keeping their children away from the evil that's out there, which is technology in my mind. Technology's gotten way out of control. It could be used for good, but because evil people rule and run things, that it's used for evil. So it's nothing but bad news. I think one of the best movies that portrays what's going on was The Village by M. Night Shyamalan. The thing with that movie is they had to use fear. The elders of the village had to use fear to keep people in the village. I propose to use truth in law to keep people in the village and abstain from the evil that this system has put forth. And I've been trying to do that for 20 years now after I stopped listening to other people and did my own research and came to my own conclusions, what went wrong and what had to be done. I've met a few good people over the years. Mike Gaddy, I've only known a year. I wish I would have known him long ago, because we are on the same foundation and the same understanding of what's wrong. And the only way this is going to get fixed is people work together, because what they do with the winning this program that they've implemented is division. And of course, like I referring back to this social media thing and these so-called moguls that run the tech over the internet, they work for the elite and a goal of making money and monopolizing everything. So that's why they have to keep people quiet, because basically they can't let the rules for this communist system out. And with that, I want to say that, if you read my writings and watch my work, and Mike agrees with this or understands it anyway, because he's come to the same conclusion, that all planks of the Communist Manifesto are applied in the United States. They have been for over 50 years. So what's going on now is basically just chaos based on Marxist principles. It's to maintain the system and keep it going. My goal is to expose it and destroy it. And the way it keeps going is basically the evil of the politicians and the system they put in place that deals with corporatism, as Ron Paul said, but he didn't explain what's really going on. The 14th Amendment was the foundation for corporatism. And I wrote a paper. I said I was going to read it, but I'm not going to read the whole thing because it would take too long. And I don't want to keep Mike quiet any longer than I need to. But anyway, there's two forms of entities under corporations. There's corporate government and I'm messing up here because I'm off my notes. I should know this better. But there's two entities of body politics. That's the word I was looking for. There's two types of body politics. There's body politic government and body politic corporate. The states in their original form were governments. They have governors. The 14th Amendment or the Constitution created a corporate body based on those republics or countries or nations, if you want to call them that. The word state's even perverted. State means status or condition of the government, basically, or the people of that that country. A state is incorporated into the state. So state's one of those magical legal terms or terms of law that they came up with to deceive people. But the federal government was always a corporation. It had a president. It's noted in you know, the document itself. They're not governing bodies. So what happened with the 14th Amendment is they pulled people into this corporate body, which created made them, without question, a legal entity. And the same thing happened under the Roman system of law. It went from a republic to a empire. And when they did that, the lawyers took the law of persons law form, which dealt with, you know, basically Roman law, and brought corporations into that law form. So what's happened under the 14th Amendment, they've expanded the powers of corporations and given them rights, and they brought people down to the same level instead of having God-given rights. So everyone is controlled under this private law that the legislatures put together, both state and federal. Of course, they're playing that game now, trying to separate it and look like they're under constitutional provisions or their constitutional authority or limitations now, but they're not doing that. They don't have to, but they're doing it for a dog and pony show. It's kind of like their last effort to save the truth of my work from what's been buried the last 10 years. It took them 10 years to bury my work. And now no one knows about it really anymore, or no one's doing anything about it because the silent majority doesn't do anything. So basically everyone's being treated as a legal entity instead of men and women. And the corporate power is what's doing this, and it serves the socialist system very well. And it's got to be broken. People got to get back to God or natural law, and not this corporate-based system, which operates totally off private law. Private law means some people belong to it, some don't, or some entities belong to it or don't. And everyone's volunteered into it. And voting is the major thing. Like I have told people for years, they violated Article 5 of the Constitution to put the 14th Amendment in place. They did it by force, which is part and parcel to Communist Manifesto. And I know you probably have trouble connecting the dots there, but if you'd read my material, they're easily connected. That's my forte, I guess, is bringing political discussion and ideals into where they've implemented it into law, or the legal system, as I like to call it. They perverted law. Henry Kissinger, for example, he's a Synagogue of Satan member. He's also, I think, Knight of Malta, one of the knights, I don't know. But he said, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. That's a quote by him from quite a while ago. And constitutional was done with the 14th Amendment, like I said. They did it by force. They implemented or put the 14th – I don't want to go into that discussion today. Maybe Mike and I could talk about it a bit. But the 14th Amendment was forced, wasn't legally ratified, so they violated their document to get it put in place. So it's all private. It's by voluntary action only, and the main action is voting. And they even tell you in 14th Amendment Section 2, it's a crime to vote, and you can't participate in voting unless you rebel, and you're rebelling against the lawful constitutional system when you do that. So all this crap's going down now is to cover all this up, and for years they wanted people voting, and they're talking about suspending the election now. So, you know, time's up. I think they're going to do something. We don't know what they're going to do. But what's going on now with this virus garbage is to destroy small business. And people like Bezos are going to own everything. And it's going to keep on going under corporate aspects of the legal system. Who knows? Maybe they'll do away with law totally and just be authoritarian. But I don't think that's going to fly, because then the majority will wake up. You know, what's going on now is a very, very slippery slope in regards to exposing the ugly head of this beast. So ignorance of the people is what the problem is, and that has been People's Awareness Coalition's goal for 20 years now, to educate people properly in law so we could avoid death and the bloody wars that these people under their communist system and whatever else you want to call their authoritarianism to be put in place. And they do it by killing people. And that's the last paragraph or a few sentences in the Communist Manifesto. They have no problem killing people. And that's basically what John Breeson and I talked about this week, about soft communism or soft socialism and hard socialism. And basically they've done both in the United States. The Civil War was the hard communist platform, how they installed this. And soft socialism is how they applied, the 10 planks and much of the dogma over about 100 years into the American governance. Anyway, with that, Mike, what do you have to add, or what do you have that could be amended to that?
I'm not sure where to start.
It's that's why I like discussion, and we were discussing a few things last hour, but you know, when I get on my soapbox like I just did, I do it best with my writings, but people won't read them, you know? You know that. People don't read anymore. And I do my best work with my writing. So,
well, why would they want to read? They have a lobotomy box.
Yeah.
Let somebody tell them what to think. And I personally think you give the people of this country way too much credit to think that they would rebel if there was no election. They won't.
They're going to keep getting jerked around.
They're not going to rebel. You know, look at it. Everyone that you see today wearing a mask would be perfectly willing to do whatever the government told them to do. They wouldn't protest. Now, maybe some of the people who are forced to wear a mask to keep a job, to keep their families going, there are those people, I think, who are totally different. But the people who willingly put that mask on and go anywhere they are told to do, and then the ones who will attack the people who don't.
We're living in an insane world. Yeah, it is insane. I haven't worn a mask yet, but I've been telling people should be boycotting places that mandate it. And isn't it interesting that they're using the Democrats as the bad guys in all this? Like I said last hour, and I've been saying for a long time, the Republicans are the original Communist Party. And as you have researched and discovered, that the red came from a socialist. That there is applied to the Republican Party.
Well, the Republican Party was founded by socialists from Europe who had migrated to the U.S. in 1848.
Right,
and the 48. By 1852, they had established themselves and had gotten into the Republican Party. And their first candidate for president, John C. Fremont, was an avowed socialist. So they were sticking with their roots. And so by 1860... they would have taken whoever they could get, and there was some deals made, and of course Lincoln got the nomination. And how many people know that in the 1860 election, Lincoln was not even on the ballot in 10 southern states? He was not even an option. He got less than 40% of the popular vote. And then he set about implementing a socialist program. Every day when he got up, and this is in the official records, in the White House, he wanted his copy of the New York Tribune so he could read it. And, of course, the person who wrote more articles for the New York Tribune than anyone else was Karl Marx. And the associate editor at the time was Charles A. Dana. And Charles A. Dana had been a close friend of Karl Marx. And so Lincoln brings him over to his administration and puts him as the Assistant Secretary of War. And so Charles A. Dana is doing the work, and Lincoln had at least three or four avowed socialists from Europe as generals in the Union Army. So naturally, of course, it went to a socialist, a purely socialist-driven society. And they were the only reason that, of course, you know, Lincoln introduced the Corwin Amendment in 1861, in March of 1861, to send out to the southern states in the hopes of keeping them in the Union for tax purposes. He didn't care if they left the Union. Nobody cared if they left the Union, except they needed the money because the South was providing most of the income, the revenue for the country. So he didn't care if they seceded. Keeping the Union together was a revenue thing. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. We need this money. We can't let them go. We can't let them get away. And the industrialists of the North knew that. They could not let the South go. The tax base was gone. So they couldn't allow that to happen. So Lincoln sends out the Corwin Amendment. And here's the question I ask people. If the Civil War was about slavery, once the Southern states had seceded, the radical Republicans controlled the Congress and the presidency and the judicial. They controlled all three branches of government. Once the Southern states was gone, why didn't the Lincoln administration outlaw slavery? They had everything they needed to do it. Why didn't they pass the 13th Amendment in 1861? Because that wasn't what the war was about. The war was about the money. The war was about the revenue. And Lincoln even admitted it in a meeting. But what about my revenue, he said. Because when the cabinet members said, hey, you know, maybe we ought to just let them go. We don't need to have a war where we kill all these people. And Lincoln said, but what about my revenue? And then he said to Horace Greeley, you know, I don't really care if I free the slaves as long as I keep the Union together. And then his Emancipation Proclamation only freed the slaves in the South where he had no control over them. Seward made the statement after he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. He said, well, isn't this weird? We release or free all of the slaves we have no control over, but all of those within our immediate authority, we keep them in bondage, which is exactly what the Emancipation Proclamation did. Kept these people in bondage, and the border states and the others. And if Lincoln was this great emancipator, why in 1864 did he admit West Virginia into the Union in June of 1864, I believe it was? Why did he admit West Virginia as a slave state over a year and a half after he issued the Emancipation Proclamation? Because he was worried about election and he needed the electoral votes. People, if you think these politicians are altruistic, you've lost your mind.
Well, I can understand why people get confused about this and that. Like I said, you know, we weren't taught law, and that's how they've basically control everyone. And as people know today, and you've observed that the courts are a joke. You know, I was, I don't know if I mentioned, but I was party to a hearing this week based on a appeal. And basically the prosecutor said nothing for 10 minutes. It just totally avoided the question of law that I addressed, which was the term resident is used under the 14th Amendment. It's vague and ambiguous and destroys what is used internationally and constitutionally. But if anyone reads my work, they know that the whole agency system is communist or Marxist. And the whole system is predicated on this term resident and people being residents of their state. Well, under the Constitution itself and what Vattel put down for the Law of Nations, a resident's a foreigner. And that was the argument. They're calling people of the states residents, and they can't be a resident and a citizen because they're in opposition to each other. So what I'm trying to do is just destroy their legal system, and I haven't found anyone that's wanted to help in 20 years. They like their TV, like you said, and whatever else that's being used to rape them and violate their rights, you know, instead. And like I've said for years, you know, if the people aren't docile, there's more of us than there is of them. But an ignorant lot of people aren't going to get anything done, or people that keep their mouth shut. As you know, someone said, I like to watch Vince of Red Elephants. He's on YouTube. He's got a good mind for things, but he's got two problems. He's a Catholic and he's into politics, the political system. But otherwise, he does good analysis. And he noted this week that 8% of the people that are causing the problem, causing problems right now, are extreme lefties, right? Correct? Which is probably right. We're the other 92%. They're not doing anything. All they do is listen to programs like this. That's why I don't like the term show, because show implicates entertainment. And anything related to the tube or radio is basically there to entertain people. It's not to educate. I'm not here to be a dancing monkey. And a lot of these people are on YouTube and whatever. Some of them are good. You know, Tim Pool's another one that's very analytical and does a good job. He's totally lost in regards to the way the system works. And that's got to change, or nothing's going to change to the positive. With that, we have another break. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's L.B. Bork. I have with me today the great Mike Gaddy. We'll be back in a couple minutes to finish up the fourth quarter of the show, fourth segment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back. This is the final segment of Dare to Think Out Loud for July 31st in the year 2020. And what a year it's going to be. It's not done yet. One of the Synagogue of Satan members that works with Google said back in 1999, don't have his name in front of me, but he said by 2020 there will be world government. Mona just said in chat, our chat room, that the world is in a big shutdown right now. And she's right. I'm going to give you the reference to another Synagogue of Satan member. He was the president of Israel. Fake Israel, as I call it. Because these people are not Israelites. They're imposters. That was interviewed by a gentleman back a few years back. And Shimon Peres, I think is his name. I'm terrible at pronouncing English, let alone foreign languages. But the reporter asked him at one time, or during this interview rather, he said, there are significant political changes on the map from day to day. First it was Tunisia, then Libya, Egypt, now Syria. What do all these changes mean for the Middle East and all that's happening? Is it positive for Israel? President's answer was, yes. I mean, there may be a transition period that will create some difficulties, but in the long run, yes. Look, it's not that those countries are changing. All countries are changing because the world has changed and anybody has a choice. And nobody has a choice. They either go along with the modern age or lag behind and really to become poor and irrelevant. What is happening, you know, governments are no longer controlling their own economy. Instead of a national economy, you have a global economy. Now, if you want to enter, you have to follow the rules of the economy. These people have stolen through communism, or capitalism, if you want to call it that, corporate powers, the dead entities that you people have become because of their system of law have stolen your family economies and made you human resources to profit for them. And you're doing nothing about it. I had a remedy 20 years ago, which included, and this is the most important part of it, people listening and working together. But that didn't happen. They came up with their social media 10 years after I released my book with the remedies needed. And now they got you clucking like chickens with their Twitter, which is based on the principle of gossip. A little bird told me. And Facebook, it's all about me. Look at what I do. So they played on two components of the human existence of being selfish and self-centered, which is totally anti-Christ. That's one of the things I cherish of Yeshua or Jesus the Christ, as some people call him, the fake Christians call him, based on, you know, the religions they put together for them to be controlled over the past 200 years, or 2,000, excuse me, 1,500 approximately. That you have to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, the way I see it, no one loves anyone but themselves. And that's partially due to human nature and what the synagogue of Satan has trained everyone to do. And it's not going to change until people change. And as I said last hour, my program, The Ultimate Remedy, is going to be dedicated to getting people activated and with PAC. So these dog and pony shows that we're witnessing right now get ended by real activism and not planned opposition. And if you people aren't up for that, we're done. And I'm tired of it. I really almost gave up my programs. I don't know. I was thinking maybe turning this one over to someone else, maybe Mike or Dave of Scorpio, if they want to take it. But I was going to quit my show, just like I did about 10 years ago. I think I quit The Ultimate Remedy on First Amendment Radio because I got tired of talking and people doing nothing. And that's what's going on now. I'm tired of it. How much information can you people gather before you make a decision to do something? If you decide, I don't think people do. I think what they do is they collect information like it's a trophy to say to someone, well, I know more than you do. Look at me. Talk radio is a waste of time. People got to get activated. Anyway, Mike, thanks for being with us today. You're one of the soldiers out there. God bless you. You can go on a soapbox now for 10 minutes if you'd like.
Oh, were you calling me a bad name? What'd you call me?
Soldier, I guess. A warrior. How about a warrior?
Well, you know, that was my high school mascot. So, yeah, I would take that. But, you know, I will never give up the fight for freedom, LB. You know, as long as I have breath, as long as the good Lord gives me breath, I will fight for freedom. And, you know, I realize that if the odds were even, everybody would be doing it. And, you know, I really don't care about the odds. I'm going to keep doing what I can do with what limited talent I have to do the very best I can for as long as I can. And that's all I can do. And, you know, I get down sometimes, and every time I get down, you know, which is about, you know, weekly, I will pick up Albert J. Knox's Isaiah and the Remnant. And I read through Isaiah and the Remnant, and I'm charged up and ready to go again. So it's that's where I go to get my tank refilled.
Yep. I don't know. People are complaining about me complaining. I go, I exited the system 25 years ago to the best of my ability. Then I refined that position. You see, people fail to understand that. Let me go back and say Rush came out with a song, and I can't remember the name of it. But the lyrics in the song were, even if you don't make a choice, you've made a choice. I think that song was Free Will.
Oh, well, LB, you want to talk about some insanity in the world?
Sure.
Well, what do you think about governors proclaiming that chicken wings are not a meal?
You and I both know this, the political system's a joke.
How much authority have we given to those people who are called politicians that they can decide what is a meal and what is not a meal? And, you know, so we had some eating establishments who added special menu items so that the patrons who just wanted a drink didn't have to order an entire meal. But now that tactic has caught the eye of comrades Newsom and Cuomo. My California buddy will love this one. They have decided that not only is it within their power to tell restaurants if they are allowed to serve drinks and food, but these governors also claim the power to dictate what counts as a meal. Really, people, you're going to put up with this? This is just absolutely incredible. Of course, the dictator of New York said the food available has to be more than just hors d'oeuvres chicken wings. You had to have some substantive food. The lowest level of substantive food are sandwiches. There is the dictate from on high in New York. Well, they will decide what's food.
You know that when I feel the best is when I don't eat and fast like the Bible recommends. The whole system, you know, they defined out it. This goes back to Justinian law and what the synagogue of Satan deems humans as animals, not creatures of the creator. They're, you know, because the so-called chosen ones are above everyone else. They're not animals, so they have their own food system. And you can go on YouTube and find these things. Well, some of it's being tossed off now because they're regulating truth on these social media sites. Well, but you know, we're deemed animals. It's all about money, Mike.
Oh, of course it is.
Everything they dictate is about the money and the profits. What Bezos just got divorced and his wife got how many billions of dollars that she's dedicating to socialism? So is her so-called ex-husband can make more billions?
Well, LB, here's the thing. Here's an axiom that most people can't understand. Rich people do not care what form of government they live under. Socialism makes them richer. So naturally, they're going to lead towards socialism. But America has gotten into this habit of believing that you have to elect rich people to office. Well, who else can afford to run for office? But we're electing rich people to office, and then they go there to get richer. But rich people don't care about what form of government you have, because the rich, the wealthy aristocracy will always control the government, no matter what you call it. And they
wasn't it said, didn't God say a long, long time ago, according to the Bible, that you don't want a king?
Well, that's 2 Samuel chapter 8. But the people of Israel said, we want a king.
Right.
You know, so the people wanted a king, and the people today want a king. And here's another good one. I know my buddy Neil out in California is going to love this one. The California State University system is adding its first new general education requirement in 40 years. Students at all 23 college campuses will now be required to take a class on social justice or ethnic studies for graduation. Isn't that wonderful? So the California Faculty Association are upset about it, and they said it was deplorable and disrespectful that this requirement was passed without the consultation of the Council of Ethnic Studies. And they're disappointed because the rule does not go far enough, because some of the classes that fulfill the requirements are not closely enough related to their agenda.
Agenda, that's a fun word, isn't it?
Yes. And then you have, you know, of course, I think most people have seen this one, where that wonderful woman pepper sprayed a couple for not wearing a mask during a picnic in San Diego. In San Diego. Well, you know, California, the place where the fruits walk the street and the people hang from trees.
I wrote a paper, and I wanted to finish off the program today with it. But now that you mentioned that word agenda, I'll put it in the chat. And if you want to download it, it's got the most downloads or views or shares at any paper I put up recently. It's one of the newest ones, too, because what it basically does is declare war against anyone that's not working with People's Awareness Coalition, because they're defaulting to the evil side of, you know, what's going on, because based on division. That's one of the rules under Sun Tzu, is divide and conquer. So people, via their egos, are dividing themselves and aiding evil. So if you want to download this paper, it's called The Choice Is Up to You. It's at PACINLAW, PACINLAW.US/choice. The choice is up to you. It's only two pages, not too much of a brain strain to read. It's in bigger a font, too, than most of the papers I put out. But anyway, here's the conclusion on the paper based on what you said, agenda. And agendas could be good or bad, but here it is. The fact is, there is a new world order, quote unquote, with its political agenda. And one pack, that means one entity or a group of people with our political agenda. Simply, our political agenda is being against theirs. So the only prudent thing left is to declare war on those who reject the truth and the need to unify. So it is really your choice. Choose good or choose evil. And I've been criticized for this. You know, well, you can criticize all you want. I just put it out in black and white. If you're voting for these people in the system and participating in the system, you're getting what you paid for, in sense, or so to speak, and getting raped. And it's going to keep on raping you. Yeah, I'm pretty angry. I usually don't get angry, but I'm done with this. I'm so done with people just talking. Get out and do something besides wear a mask like your masters told you to. Oh, by the way, Mike, I don't know if you heard this, but my friend Nathan said Fossey, who is a synagogue of Satan follower based on his Masonic hand symbols and his hidden hand thing he does. He's done out in public. He's evil. He said this week that people are going to have to start wearing goggles too, because the virus could enter through the eyes. So that's coming.
Well, LB, here's a classic. If the people will tolerate this, then we know exactly what kind of country we have. In Washington, D.C., you can now be fined $1,000 for not wearing a mask in public. But the mayor of Washington, D.C., said that he would exempt lawmakers, judges, and all federal employees from such an order. So apparently federal employees are incapable of catching COVID-19.
It's all a dog and pony show. You and I both know that.
Well, look at two other things. Look at this, LB. Let's throw this out real quickly. The governor of the state of Indiana has issued an executive order which carries 6 months in jail for not wearing a mask. And then you have Miami. The Miami police have formed a 39-officer strong unit in Miami to look for violators showing their dirty faces in public without a mask.
Dirty anyone, faces?
Well, I threw that in there. I'm okay. Sorry. Anyone caught without a mask will be charged $50 for a first offense, then $100. A third offense comes with a $500 fine and arrest. The insanity is overwhelming. But if you're a federal employee, you don't have to follow the law. Wait a minute. Let me figure that out. Aha. Yeah, I get it now. Sorry. I need a federal job.
Well, I guess that would help, but it doesn't, negate the fact that these people are criminals and people are voting for these criminals. They're approving their criminality. And that's why I chose the 14th Amendment, because it's a no-brainer for people that have brains to understand what I've written about how the 14th Amendment works. I didn't complete my thought, I guess, when I was explaining how it works. They couldn't do it lawfully under their Constitution because they had to remove the states of the South to get any kind of vote on approving the 14th Amendment, which is totally illegal, unlawful, according to their own document. If you watch Spielberg's Lincoln, they go into that Lincoln was, not that that's as accurate as some of the material you pull up from archive and whatever, or history. But I believe that Lincoln did have the quandary of deciding whether the 13th Amendment was even legal or lawful to do under the Constitution, or the war that caused it, which it wasn't. But the 14th Amendment has to be approved by each individual, and they do so by voting, and they say it what the penalty is right in there, that you can't vote unless you participate in the rebellion that they set up, because you have to individually approve of it. And they are even nicer to say that it's a crime, which turns you into a frickin' slave pursuant to their new 13th Amendment. But no one challenges their due process that they, or they're so ignorant and don't listen, that they happily become slaves pursuant to the 13th Amendment into voluntary servitude, which the 13th Amendment prohibits unless convicted for the punishment of a crime, which they're not questioning. They don't question it. So the whole thing's a con job, and I've been trying to expose this for 20 years, and it's totally ignored.
LB, have you ever heard of a former governor in Louisiana by the name of Edwin Edwards?
No.
Well, he is probably one of the only people ever to run for office who actually had a truthful bumper sticker.
Okay.
Back when he ran for governor, and he actually won in the state of Louisiana, his bumper sticker read, "Vote for the crook. It's important."
Well, like I said, people are criminals for voting. It's written. That's the language, and that's the operational law. So back to what I said about someone in this station saying that my stuff's my material is theory. Whatever. What? The only non-theory is if it comes out of a guy that wears a Halloween costume's mouth. I'm talking about the judges, the black Geneva robes they wear that are pursuant to the Calvinist movement of the 1500s. By the way, the priests wear the same kind of robe. They're all called Geneva robes, part of the Catholic or the Roman Catholic Church, which is basically what I'm telling you is the government's your religion. I don't care if you believe in atheism, or you're a Buddha or whatever you think you are. The government's your religion, and it's stealthily controlled by the Vatican or the Jesuits who took over that control the synagogue. They're just useful idiots for the synagogue of Satan. So anyway, that's the crux of my work, and it's too bad people listen to other people. because most of it's disinformation. Like I've said, they can't get away with this for as long as they have without their own disinformation agents out there. And when the disinformation agents are paid by people like Bezos or whoever is making all this money, you know, Mitt Romney's one of them. You know, he said corporations are people too. So he's in support of what I described being the problem, through these agencies and organizations they put together. So anyone that's making the big money is going to be a liar, and they're going to pay the people to lie and deceive people. So anyway, only got a couple minutes, Mike. Do you have any closing thoughts? Did I lose you?
I fell asleep. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm boring.
Let's everybody just look up for homework today. Look up 28 USC 3002:15a. That's your homework for today.
Yeah. It's an entity thing. Courtesy of the United States, so-called. The corporation. And again, the states are republics. The federal government is technically not a republic. It guarantees each state a republican form of government. And really, that's the only hope for people is republican freedom, which separates people from this red system under the 14th Amendment. It's an immediate remedy right now with not having to change anything in the Constitution. But if people don't do something about this, which includes learning law and how it works and the mistakes that were made in the past, it's going to get worse. These people are going to surely enslave you to no end, along with your children. That's it for this week. This has been Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's LB Bork. I hope to have a pleasant weekend. I hope you do too. Don't get caught not wearing a mask. Ha ha. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.